And the first pitch, line towards left center. It's a base hit for Zunino. Here comes Adames to score the go-ahead run. And the Rays have their first lead of the league championship series. It's 2-1 on the base hit by Zunino.
Wilson surveys, fires, and it is going to be caught by DK Metcalf for a touchdown. That is an unbelievable drive.
And that's it. It's over. This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Happy Turkey Day. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Scotty.
Now do you, because we got a lot to talk about. A lot's happened.
We have a ton to go through today.
So, and that's usually the case on Mondays in the fall, right, with the NFL, and usually you'd have the hockey and basketball starting up, but instead we have NHL free agency. The Leafs look very, I don't want to say very different, but considerably different around the edges than they did when we were on the air 72 hours ago. But I figured, out of the kindness of my heart, and because I am grateful and I am thankful to be able to come here each and every weekday and work with you, Ziggy, I would give you 90 seconds to say whatever you want to say about Jimmy Garoppolo, my San Francisco 49ers. Whatever you need to get off your chest, speak it now or forever hold your peace, because there's not going to be, and I'm going to be very clear about this and make sure of it, there's not going to be any time for the rest of the show to say it. So have at it.
Ryan Fitzmagic with a monster game, three TDs, 350 yards, just picking apart the 49ers. That's all I have to say. I mean, can you believe this Dolphins team? You want Tua in? No, we don't want Tua in. We want Fitzmagic, all right? Ryan Fitzpatrick, what a game. I don't know what to say about this team. 49ers, you can complain all you want. You don't have your guys in. We got injuries. It's just not the same. Jimmy G's coming off an injury. I don't want to hear it, okay?
It's almost as if when you strip talent away from a team, they're not as good as when their talent's available. It's almost as if. This is what sucks about an NFL season. Like, if you lose a really good player on your favorite NHL team for 15 games, he's still going to be there for 67 others. If you lose a really good player on your favorite baseball team for a month, well, in the NFL, you lose a guy for a month, you lose him for a quarter of a season. If you lose him for a month in baseball, you lose him for 30, probably 28 out of 162 games. You can't recover. Jimmy was not good yesterday, though. Jimmy might like Elaine, but Jimmy was throwing floating ducks.
You're going to blame that on the ankle? Like, come on. I mean, something's not right with him. He looks even worse than his bad days. But you think Jimmy's the guy? You think they can go the distance with Jimmy?
Well, they were 5 minutes away in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl with a lead last year.
They didn't win.
No, I know. Care. I understand that. It's the same question that they were asking about Alex Smith back in 2012 when Colin Kaepernick took over for Smith. Like, do you need somebody who's more dynamic? The question, in fact, Ziggy, may be answered ultimately in next year's draft. Well, the Niners' schedule is a complete and total slog here the rest of the way. They're playing very good teams for the most part for the rest of the season. Got a couple games against the Rams, a couple games against the Seahawks, one more against the Cardinals. They got to go to New England. They got to go to New Orleans. They got to host Green Bay. They got a lot on their plate here.
Yeah.
And if they are a 5 or a 6 win team when it's all said and done, they may end up in a draft slot that affords them the opportunity to take one of those college quarterbacks. So It's a gross scene in San Francisco. The saddest part of the weekend is Dak Prescott.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't do well with that when I'm not expecting to see it. I couldn't watch the replay. Anyway, compound fracture of his ankle. He has undergone successful surgery already. It was done overnight. It was urgent to reset the foot. But his foot was at a 45-degree angle, and he left the field being carted off in tears. And it's so weird, Ziggy, because I'm sitting there, and I'm caught up in the moment, and I'm texting a couple of my buddies who are 49ers. Got to get them off the brain for the next 11 and a half months. I'm texting a couple of my buddies who are Cowboys fans and just commiserating about it, because it doesn't matter whether you cheer for a team or not. You'd never want to see that happen to a player. And as Dak is being wheeled off, the thought that comes into my mind, it's crazy how we think of these players as assets. Because it immediately occurs to me, this guy, he signed the franchise tag. He didn't lock in long-term with the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had some big money on the table in the five-year range.
5 years, 175.
And
he turned it down.
And 175 would not have been fully guaranteed, but probably $100 million of that for sure would have been. Now, the young man isn't going to starve. He can live the rest of his life off of the franchise tag salary he's making this year alone. So we don't need to necessarily get out a violin for Dak Prescott, but that's the type of injury from which you never fully return. He will play in the NFL again. I don't doubt it. He's 27 years old, but that's the type of injury that changes you forever. That's a tough one to come back from.
That one was tough to watch. I actually didn't have the game on. The way I found out about it was from our group chat, and I'm just like, oh no. Like, right away, I don't like going into the... I prefer to be warned than watching something live,
yeah,
because I can't do the knees and the ankles and some of the stuff in football. It's literally, I couldn't eat the rest of the day. It was that bad. Like, that was that right ankle. Like, it's completely sideways.
Yeah. It's 45 degrees.
Oh, my goodness. Like, it's awful. I feel bad for Dak. But I don't know where you stand on this, but I saw a lot last night of, well, Jerry Jones and the Cowboys must take care of Dak. And
I threw that out there on Twitter. And I will cop.
Yeah,
I'm not,
but you didn't get into it the way other people did.
I'm not like waving.
But
I'm not waving Jerry Jones's flag, right? I am not a Jerry Jones guy by any stretch of the imagination. So that's I'm copping to how I feel about that. They don't owe him anything.
That's my take, is that they, when you put an offer, a big offer, would that not have made him the highest paid QB at the time? 5 years, 175.
It would have put him in the range, and the guaranteed money would have been, like I say, right around the 9-figure mark.
Yeah. I don't understand that take where you need to take care of a player you offered him to make him one of the richest players in the league. I don't understand why you're going to take care of him now that he got hurt. He's gambling on himself, is he not, with the franchise tag, taking the 1 year?
Effectively, yes.
Yeah. So
trying to enhance his negotiating position, and he was enhancing it with his performance up to that point yesterday.
Yeah, so as bad as I feel for Dak, listen, I don't want to see any player get injured, but when that happens, the team doesn't owe you anything. So I'm just confused on... I just don't understand the take, and Jerry Jones needs to take care of Dak Prescott. I'm sorry, but you offered him a 5-year, 175 deal. What are you going to sign him to the same deal now he's hurt? He might. What happens if Dak's never the same quarterback again?
The whole thing with the quarterbacking now, Ziggy, it's obviously the highest paid position in the sport, and inarguably the most important position of the in the sport, because if you have a guy, it gives you a chance. The whole thing with quarterbacks and what they get paid, it's become a you-know-what swinging contest, right? And it seems like every contract that gets signed is the richest ever signed in that moment. Matthew Stafford did it with the Detroit Lions a few years back for a cup of coffee. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy likes Elaine, was the highest ever paid quarterback. In terms of, doesn't mean he's going to take home every cent, because not all the money's guaranteed at the end of the day if they walk from the contract at some point. But in that moment that he signed his contract, it was the highest ever. Then, and I'm getting this out of order, but Aaron Rodgers usurped that, and on it goes. So these guys are always trying to one-up the previous record holder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dak Prescott got caught up in that. And I mean,
I'm not paying him now. If I'm an owner of it, if I'm a, not just take Dak out of it, just if a player, if I offer a player to make him one of the highest paid players, he turns it down for a 1-year deal, then all of a sudden gets injured, I'm not just going to throw money at him now. Sorry.
No, and here's what Dak has to do, and we cross our fingers for him, because first of all, we want health. He's got to come back, and it's probably going to be a calendar year at least before he's ready.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how long does it take to put your foot back on your body?
Well, Alex Smith of Washington returned yesterday a little less than 2 years after his gruesome injury on the field. So you talk about weird stuff.
Was that the knee? No.
That was essentially the lower half of his right leg twisted and gross.
Oh, that was awful.
But Ziggy, he also had 17 subsequent surgeries to deal with infections and things that came up.
He had some special on.
He had nerve problems and everything.
Yeah, but they did some special on him and what he was going through, right? I forget what station it was on, but they did a whole breakdown of what he was going through. Yeah, it's a long road back when you have something that catastrophic to come back on the field. Yeah, so he returned. What's it been, 2 years?
November of 2018 is when it happened. Now, he's got 10 years age on Dak. He's 37. Dak's 27.
That matters huge, because I'm going for a surgery in a couple weeks, and the doctor said I'm getting a similar surgery that I had 20 years ago, and he said, you're not 20 years old anymore.
Are you getting the reverse vasectomy? Are you missing time on the show? I need to know these things. I need to know weeks in advance what's going on. I don't do well with spontaneity. I don't want to do a show with you one day.
It's in a couple weeks.
And then the next,
I actually am missing a day of work.
Oh, are you? Because the next morning I come to work and Ziggy's not here, and then I find out you're gone for a month, and I'm like, that'll just throw me. We need to talk about this.
I am having surgery.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next. We got too much to talk about right now. We'll get to it.
You don't want to discuss.
No, I'll discuss it. Just not right now.
It's not the reverse vasectomy, though. You can confirm.
It's not. Not this one.
Okay.
Maybe later in the year.
We got to talk a little bit, and Hugh will jump into studio. LeBron James cementing the legacy. He is the first player in NBA history to be the best player on championship teams with three different franchises. He is not the first player to win championships with three different franchises. And in fact, Danny Green, his teammate, accomplished the very same thing last night. But he is the first player in history to be the best player on each of the three franchises with whom he won a title. So congratulations to LeBron James. And this is a guy who has perfected transcending his sport. He will be as omnipresent in our lives 20 years from now in the not dissimilar way to Michael Jordan, the way that Michael Jordan is. LeBron James will always be a part of our lives, and he has accomplished epic things on the basketball court. And just as importantly, Ziggy, he has done it in a way that reminds me of Derek Jeter in baseball, where we don't know, and we should never go on the radio or anywhere in media and suggest that we know people and suggest that we know how they conduct their lives when they're not on the field or not on the court or not on the ice. but to our knowledge, LeBron James has lived it pretty honestly. To our knowledge, he has lived it pretty honestly. And he is a vocal spokesperson. He's encouraging people to get out and vote. He has bought and paid and opened a school in Akron, Ohio, that is actually part of the Akron public school system, but is an opportunity for disadvantaged kids to attend school. It's in a tough neighborhood, if you will. He's done a lot of things off the court, and he has continued to be dominant on the court, and he is likely on the way to being a billionaire athlete, a guy worth $1 billion. Not that we celebrate money. This guy does it all. And he is a legend of our time. And I'll never forget going to a Raptors Heat game in November, early November of 2013. The NBA season had just started. And I made a point of going and seeing the Miami Heat play because I'd never seen LeBron live to that point. I think we need to appreciate greatness when it is in our midst, because LeBron James is one of those athletes that we will tell our kids and our grandkids about 30, 40, 50 years from now. We got to see this guy play in his prime. I think we got to do a better job of appreciating the greatness when it's before us.
Yeah, and what he's done in the playoffs, going to the finals, this is his 10th appearance. That, to me, is absolutely crazy, Scotty. I don't
know how you feel about that. Playing basketball, and I know it's a different year, but playing basketball into June, this guy's got shortened off seasons almost every year.
Yeah, I just how long he's been doing it for, and I love the MJ. It's just nonstop. Who's greater?
Who cares?
Michael Jordan
or
LeBron?
They're both great, and they're different.
The fact that LeBron has done it for so long, like, I think when you look at raw talent and what a player brings, I love the Michael Jordan story. I love what he did for basketball. I love the whole storylines that went with those Bulls teams and how he left and came back and found a way to win with sometimes, you know, question marks around who he played with. With LeBron, the way he's been so consistent for so long with so many different players and different organizations, I think it's a notch above what MJ did. Just the fact that he's still doing it at this age, that's what gets it for me. And he has all the playoff records. That it's dominating the playoffs. That for me sets him in a different, you know, just a little bit better than MJ. I know you don't want to talk about and compare them, but I mean, that's what it comes down to after these championships. This year's win, though, I don't know what you think about the win this year. Was it easy for him?
How could it possibly
be easy for
him? No. I mean, I think I look at it bigger picture. The detractors will want to say, Ziggy, that he's 4-6 in those 10 finals appearances. And they'll also probably point to his first year in Miami where they lost to Dallas in the NBA Finals, and they were supposed to be. Remember when he arrived in Miami with the decision, and then he called them the Heatles, you know, play on the word Beatles. They're world famous, the Heatles, and predicted not one, not two, not three, but 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 championships. I think he still wears that in the minds of his detractors. But he pulled those bloody Cavaliers teams along. You know,
that for me is the Cavalier win was the biggest championship that he's won.
Down 3-1 too.
And I went to a couple of those games in the finals, and watching what he did, some of the best athletic performances I've ever seen. But you can make the point for this year. He avoided the Bucks, avoided the Clippers, avoided the Raptors, played a fifth seed without Dragic in the finals, got taken to 6. You know what I mean? No KD, no Steph, no Clay. I mean, You can say it was a cakewalk to the finals, but winning any championship for me, I don't care who's in it, doesn't matter who gets knocked out, which player gets injured, for you to go the distance is incredible. I you can never take a championship away from someone and say it was easy.
To do it in the bubble, that Denver team and the gave bubble them a fight, you know, like it's.
But there's a case to be made that this was a lot easier than, you know.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that. We were denied the matchup that we anticipated in the Western Conference Final when the Clippers puked against Denver, right? I mean, that was, and I think that had they beaten Kawhi and Paul George, people would have said, okay. Because everybody's, if you look at it, it sets up beautifully for the NBA and the Western Conference next year. You're going to have the Clippers, presumably, at least with their big two, back. You're going to have Golden State coming off an aberration of a year where they were just brutally injured. They're going to end up with a high draft pick as a result of that. They're going to be right back in the conversation with Steph and Clay healthy, Draymond. Like, the Golden State Warriors will be back in the conversation. The Western Conference and the NBA next year, Denver is going to want to have a say at the table. Utah is going to want to have a say at the table. There are going to be a lot of good teams in the Western Conference next year. So that'll be the next challenge for LeBron James, and he'll have to do it at 37 years old. Now, drum roll, please. We're going to throw the troll poll from late last week back up on Twitter because I want to see if the answers have changed in terms of the state of the Leafs.
Uh-oh.
But here's my take.
Where is it? You didn't put it up on Twitter?
I haven't put it up yet. That's for the commercial break. I can't walk and chew gum, Ziggy. I can't talk into a microphone and type at the same time. So I'm going to throw the troll poll up in just a couple minutes. TJ Brody, in. Zach Bogosian, in. Wayne Simmonds, in. Jimmy Vesey, or VC. Paul?
VC.
Jimmy VC, yep. In. Out. Andreas Janssen, Kasperi Kapanen, Tyson Berry, Cody Ceci. Kyle Dubas has changed things around the edges with this hockey team. Big Four, the $40 million troop, balls in your court. We're keeping you together. At this point, the goaltender hasn't changed, so we'll call it the Big Five. We'll call it the Big Six if you want, with Morgan Riley as well, because he's been here for a hell of a long time, and he's effectively one of the captains of this team. Big Six, the ball is in your court. Now's the time. We don't want to take from our Big Six, but if you can't get it done this coming year with all the changes around the edges we've made, we're going to have to make even more significant changes. That's it, Ziggy, because I look at this defensive core and you cannot tell me that we know for sure with great certainty that it is much, much better than what they had last year. Because we didn't think Tyson Berry was going to stink, right? We're counting on TJ Brody not stinking, especially at that term and dollar. We kind of had a sense of what Cody Ceci was. Zach Bogosian effectively fills in for him. It's a low risk, potentially high reward deal because it's only 1 year, $1 million. But I don't look at that defensive core and feel that I can be sold on the fact that it is absolutely 100% going to be much better than the core that they put out there on the ice most nights last year.
It's better. I love the moves he made. I love who he went after. I called the Simmonds, Bogosian. That's who I was hoping they would target. They got them. They got them for apparently less money than they would have gotten other teams. The Brody signing, 4 years, backloaded contract. I love what they did there. He's a guy, big minutes, plays the right side, left shot, but very comfortable on the right side. That's what this team needs. And if you didn't get Pietrangelo, I'm happy with that. Bogosian going to add a lot of toughness on the back end. This is now
say the word, one Craig.
Craig, lots of Craig. Craig on Craig on special supplements. Craig on supplements is what he brings you. Simmons, this is what we talk about, right? Who are they going to bring in? It's not just toughness and Craig, though. And I talked about this on Hockey Central. You had Kyle Clifford here. Was he tough? Yes. Did he change your makeup of your team? Yes. Did he make other players play bigger? I didn't see that. Now you're going to notice with Bogosian and Simmons, now you got three guys. You got Muzzin and those two. Is this team, even Brody, I mean, he plays with a little bit of edge as well, which I like. He can get mean. So will this change the makeup and the DNA of the team? That's the big question for me. And I would lean that it would. This is going to make guys an inch bigger. That's what you need. That's what happened in Tampa. They're guys that score goals. They play a little bit bigger.
Okay, so
that's what you need.
Let me repeat what you said in a different way. The high-paid guys on this team are out of excuses.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's time.
I mean, they have one more year. This is it.
Vroom, I guarantee. Start the engine.
Guaranteed. This is you. They have one more year together. I thought maybe a shakeup was coming this year, this offseason. I think it's. I really am going to give guys a free pass on this pandemic year. I'm giving it a
pass. Yeah, but they played 70 games leading up to the pandemic.
But you don't know what happens in the playoffs. You never know. This group gets in, you don't know. I'm sorry, but I'm back in the big four. Well, I thought a change was going to come with the flat cap. Just you're going to have to unload a big contract to go out and get the pieces you need. Not a knock against any of the guys. Just you're going to have to. That's just the reality. Look what's going on in the NHL right now. Look at all these contracts being blown away.
Well, if this team is life and death to make the playoffs, or if they go out in the first round again next year, there are going to be a lot of questions about not all, but some of the big four. And I think there will start to be some questions about the front office. I mean, the expectations need to go up, not down, with this Maple Leafs team in this market. We'll get into it a little bit more with Christopher Stieg coming up at 8:30. Ross Tucker on week 5 in the NFL. We got to talk about Dak Prescott and a huge Seahawks win in Seahawks style late last night in the Sunday night football game. John Paul Morosi at 7:30 on the baseball playoffs. Stephen Brunt on the Leafs, baseball, so much more. Hugh Burrell has sat down, and it'll be a little Burrell the lead on Thanksgiving Monday coming up. All right, I did it, Ziggy. I put the poll question up. Repost, newly asked, which Canadian-based Eastern Conference NHL team will be the next to make the second round of the playoffs? This was a troll poll from Thursday. We're asking it again this morning. Get your votes on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burrell, at Fan590. And we'll go over the responses throughout the show. Stephen Brunt at the top of the hour. Untucket gift cards to give away in 15 minutes. And Hugh is here to Burrell the lead.
Yeah, a very busy Burrell the lead on this Thanksgiving Monday. Hello, boys. Happy Monday to you. Well, he did it for Kobe. LeBron James and the Lakers won the NBA championship with a 106-93 win over the Heat last night, taking the series in 6 games. He was named Finals MVP for a 4th time and says the doubters gave him the motivation he needed.
I think, personally, thinking I had something to prove fuels me, and it fueled me over these last year and a half since my injury. It fueled me because no matter what I've done in my career up to this point, there's still a little rumblings of doubt or, you know, comparing me to, you know, the history of the game and has he done this, has he done that, you know, so having that in my head, having that in my mind, saying to myself, why not still have something to prove? I think it fuels me.
All right, so LeBron's fourth ring reignites the debate of who's the greatest of all time, Jordan or LeBron? There's no doubt if you ask Lakers coach Frank Vogel.
He's the greatest player the basketball universe has ever seen. And if you think you know, you don't know. Okay, until you're around him every day, you're coaching him, you're seeing his mind, you're seeing his adjustments, seeing the way he leads the group. If you think you know, you don't know.
LeBron, number four, two behind Jordan. Here we go.
Is there a way, I don't think this question's ever been asked, is there a way that we can settle this where 100% of people are going to believe one way or the other?
Yeah,
is there no, because at some point we have got to settle this. Do we not?
I think if you're embedded in one camp, if you're a Jordan fan, you're not changing your mind. If you're a LeBron fan, you're not changing your mind. It's two different players, two different eras. Heard you guys discussing it earlier. It's tough, but it's one
and
of those
neither
debates.
Guy is diminished.
No.
If you say the other is better.
Maybe the question, not the, who the greatest of all time, but if you were picking first overall in an NBA draft that included everybody to ever play, who would you pick?
Ah. See, Hugh, that's a good spin on that question.
Yeah, a little bit different.
I don't know. I just love LeBron's power. LeBron James. I've always said that if you were to carve an athlete out of clay, you would produce,
yeah,
LeBron James,
like your prototypical basketball
six
player.
Foot eight, yep. 260 pounds. 0.1% body fat,
yeah,
and an absolute beast.
Yep,
he's a legend, yep. an absolute legend.
For me, it's the amount of years that he's been at the top. Right, 10 finals in 17 years is very special. Obviously, it comes down to the wins. I get it.
He also bounced around a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that he could win in different spots does it for me as well. That's another big sign of one of the all-time greatest. Okay, you did it with a stacked team. Go somewhere else and do it there. He's done that a couple times now. So those are the two big ones for me.
Yeah, those are good points. I would counter that by saying Jordan did it with one team, which to me is impressive, to keep that team at the very top for that length of time, as opposed to just the build a team approach that we're seeing now in the NBA. But neither strategy's wrong if it's all about getting champions.
And outside, Jordan left though, right?
Well,
Jordan played baseball for a couple of years.
It's a year, I know, but even taking a year off, it's a year off. LeBron James has been hitting it every single year. No days off. No,
Jordan left and they didn't win. And those, I will say that the two sets of Bulls teams with which he won three in a row, the first outside of Pippen was very different than the second.
Mm-hmm.
Scottie was there.
Yep.
But almost every other character was played by somebody different.
Yeah. But again, the debate rages on. That's why we love sports. The Leafs were busy during the first weekend of free agency. Kyle Dubas signing five players. Yesterday, Jimmy Vesey, the forward, inking a one-year $900,000 deal after notching 20 points in 60 games with the Sabres last season. Dubas also signing Wayne Simmonds, Zach Bogosian, Travis Boyd, and defenseman TJ Brody. Now, Brody says playing with Morgan Riley, oh, that'll be a thrill.
I know he's a great player, and, he's similar to Gio. He's, one of those guys that's good at everything, and, he's physical, he's good defensively, skilled offensively, and hope if I play with him that I make him better.
Brody spent his entire career with the Flames, racking up 266 points in 634 games. So how do we feel about all the Leafs' moves quickly?
The onus is on the big four now. Step up. Yep. Everybody's tired of it. It's time to start going deeper into the playoffs. That's got to be the expectation. I'm not 100% convinced that this is an entirely better team than the one that they had last year. We thought Tyson Barrie was going to work out here. But we take our chances with this, and the expectation will be that the Big Four gets it done.
I like the moves he made. I love the Brody signing, the Bogosian signing. Those are two of the big ones on the back end. I know everyone wants all this help up front, and we got to get tougher. We need players to go and get pucks. But for me, you have to have the back end. It's got to be solid. These two signings are huge for this team. TJ Brody playing with Morgan Rielly is going to be great. And the fact that Brody played with Giordano is big, right? You always have to look from where a player comes from, who he's played with. I would say that Brody really helped Giordano. Obviously, it helps when you play with good players, but the impact Brody had with Giordano and the Flames is a big, selling point for me. And I love the fact that they got him.
On the text lines to 590-590, Richard shrivels in Coldwater. Hey, what signings did Dubas make that get you excited for next season? Nobody. Remember, these are guys no one else wanted. Have a good turkey day. Richard shrivels in Coldwater.
Definitely.
Well, you could say that the St. Louis Blues didn't want Petrangelo, but last time I checked, he's pretty darn good.
Well, yeah. We're not going to argue with Richard shrivels.
No.
Okay.
By the way, Petrangelo expected to sign with Las Vegas very soon. The Sabres made a splash yesterday. They signed Taylor Hall to the biggest one-year free agent deal in NHL history, $8 million. Sabres GM Kevin Adams explains why it's just a one-year deal.
We were open to different scenarios, and just because it's 1 year shouldn't give any indication that that's what we only wanted 1 year. We believe in Taylor as a player and as a person, and we hope this turns into a long-term relationship, for both sides that works, so we'll see where that goes, but we've made that clear to them, and they made that clear to us as well.
Hall and Eichel, nice 1-2 punch for Buffalo.
Can I translate what Kevin Adams said there? Yeah, I watched my predecessor give Jeff Skinner a max term with big money, and well, we don't want to do that with two wingers who are in and out. Yeah. So we'll take a one-year flyer and see where it gets us.
Show me you can do it first.
Go ahead, Zach. Buffalo, though, did you guys expect Buffalo for a one-year deal? And Taylor Hall wants to go where he's going to win? What? That's what he said going into free agency. I want to go somewhere where I'm going to win. Offense to Buffalo, that wasn't the first team that came to my mind on a one-year deal.
He saw $8 million, and he said, Buffalo looks pretty good.
How many Eastern Conference playoff teams are locks next year? Philadelphia, Washington, Tampa Bay, Boston should get in.
Pittsburgh.
Rangers.
Pittsburgh should get in. You think the Rangers are going to?
I think so, yeah.
So we've already got five or six. The Leafs, right? Where does Buffalo fit in the top eight?
Yeah, he probably didn't get any offers anywhere else.
What he wants? He wants to score 30 goals and get paid next summer.
There you go. It's not
a bad
strategy.
Doesn't care where he does it.
Let's move on to the NFL. Tough day to be a Cowboys fan.
Prescott breaks the tackle. And picks up a total of 9 more.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You almost got to hope it's a cramp, don't you, if you're a Cowboy fan right there? But, that does not look good, Jim.
No, it does not, Jim. Compound fracture of Dak Prescott's right ankle. He had surgery overnight. Apparently, it went very well, but he is done for the season. Prescott was having an incredible season, too. Entered week 5 with 1,690 passing yards, NFL best, and the most by a Cowboys QB through 4 games in team history. After turning down the Cowboys' offer of 5 years, $175 mil, Prescott ended up signing a franchise tag for this year, $31.4 million. Cowboys beat the Giants 37-34 under Andy Dalton.
It is just catastrophic. And I don't even want to think of it from a business perspective and the quite likely tens of millions of dollars that Dak Prescott has cost himself over the course of his career. You just have to hope he gets healthy. He's a really fun and special player to
watch. Seems like a nice kid, yeah.
And we saw it with Alex Smith with the Washington football team a couple of years ago. He just came back yesterday. You never want to see somebody go off the field like that.
No, because you're never the same coming back, for sure. Quite the day for Steelers receiver Chase Claypool.
Hits the snap, is back on third down. Over the middle, there's Chase Claypool. Steps out of a tackle. 10, 5, touchdown for the rookie from Notre Dame. Here's the snap. He throws it down the field. Oh, that is Chase Claypool into the end zone for a Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown.
Yeah, two of Clayton's four touchdowns yesterday. He set the record for the most touchdowns scored in a game by a Canadian.
That's getting all the play in the U.S. today, isn't it, Hugh?
Yeah. Who is this Canadian kid? Hey, the kid can play.
Those Canadians can play.
Yeah.
Into the end zone.
Not bad, huh? Elsewhere, the Seahawks are now 5-0 after a 27-26 come-from-behind winner of the Vikings. Russell Wilson did it again.
How are those jerseys allowed?
Yeah, in case you haven't seen the highlights or weren't watching the game yesterday, they were wearing their neon green jerseys with the blue pants.
Yeah, what are they? Who's, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, like who's, I who, don't know. Are they like, I'm a little colorblind. Are they colorblind or what?
I don't know. It's
I don't know what it's like to be colorblind, but there are times, Siggy, when I suppose you can be thankful for it. You should be thankful for it.
I have a hard time with like dark blue and black. I sometimes can't tell the difference. Believe me, I had no trouble seeing those jerseys.
Well, Seattle
yesterday.
Had the color rush. Saw those. They had the pants to go with the shirts on the color rush a couple years ago.
Gross. The Chiefs no longer undefeated after a 40-32 loss to the Raiders. Falcons firing coach Dan Quinn and GM Tom Dimitroff after yesterday's loss to the Panthers, Rams, and Saints in the Monday nighter. And before we go, we cannot fail to mention Rafa Nadal and the magnificence that he is. He beat Novak Djokovic 6-love, 6-2, 7-5 to capture his 13th French Open title yesterday. Ties Roger Federer now with 20 Grand Slams. Nadal's record at the French Open, 102. A shiny penny. If you can name the two guys that beat him, you might have an idea of one of them.
Well, I'm going to guess Federer.
Yep. No, Federer's never beaten him in the French. Djokovic has beaten
him. Okay, but Federer did win the French once, right?
I think Nadal was injured. I think he pulled out of that.
All right.
Yeah. The other guy, again, a shiny penny if you could come up with Robin Soderling in the fourth round back in 2009. And not for nothing yesterday, if you're watching the golf, Bryson DeChambeau drove a 300-yard par 4 with an iron. And then he made the eagle putt. There you go.
I feel like Hulk Hogan's theme music should be playing whenever you talk about Bryson DeChambeau.
What more do you say about the guy other than just wow?
Did they take 5.5 hours to play?
Funny. No, but there was.
Were there squealing wheels out of the parking lot?
Yeah, exactly. And horns going
afterward.
But somebody in the LPGA on Friday was assessed a 2-stroke penalty for slow play, and she ended up missing the cut by a stroke.
You guys would have shot 300 if we would have done 2 strokes for slow play and we played. And I will say this. So we played golf with the whole crew a couple weeks ago, and I played once since then.
Yeah.
And I walked, and the course was a kilometer longer.
Yeah.
I walked in 3.5. That just tells you about the crew.
Yeah, but you were probably playing with good players who are always on the fairway with their drives.
No, I'm telling you, my buddies are not good.
Silk Gentilly. We're going to lay that at Silk Gentilly's feet.
Oh,
smooth swinging Silk Gentilly.
We all have
smooth like Silk.
We all have our blame there.
I'm going to say they were all slow. I'm not going to center anybody.
All right. 416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We do it each and every day at this time. We play all or nothing. $100 in Untuckit gift cards are up for grabs. You want to be the contestant and win a Thanksgiving Day prize? Call now. We play next. $100 in Untucket gift cards available this morning. 3 true or false questions in all or nothing. You got to get them all right or all wrong. So it's okay to get the first one wrong, but if you do, you got to get numbers 2 and 3 intentionally incorrect. Our contestant on this Thanksgiving Monday morning is Bob in Toronto. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, fellas.
Good luck to you and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
Ziggy, question number 1.
Last season, Zach Hyman played in 14 fewer games than Taylor Hall, but scored more goals than him. True or false?
False.
It's actually true. Hall had 16 goals in 65 games, while Hyman had 21 in 51. I'm a little shocked as well. No. Should Hyman be asking for $8
million? Oh, here we go. Wow. You want to start setting up the conversation for next summer in Toronto? Nice. All right, Bob, you're okay. You just got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. Answer the opposite of what you think is right.
Okay.
All right, Bob, here we go. Rafa Nadal won his 13th French Open yesterday. Nobody has ever won any of the majors that many times, male or female. Is that true or is that false? And get it wrong.
That is true.
I got it right.
How dare you get that one right?
And nobody's really even close to Nadal's 13 at Roland Garros. Federer and Martina Navratilova are the men's and women's leaders at Wimbledon with 8 and 9 respectively. Mm-hmm. Sampras and Federer have 5 U.S. Opens each. Serena and Chrissy Everett have 6 on the women's side. And then it's Serena with 7 Aussie Opens and Novak Djokovic, no joke, with 8.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so 13 of Nadal's 20 Grand Slams have come on the clay of Roland Garros.
The question I would have asked had Bob gotten to me, now that the KC Chiefs have lost, there are no more perfect teams in the AFC. True or false? The answer is false, so he would have needed to say true. The Bills, Steelers, and Titans are still undefeated. $200 in Untucked gift cards will be up for grabs when we play All or Nothing at this time tomorrow morning. NHL free agency, a big weekend for the Leafs. They look different, but how much better will they be? Talk baseball playoffs as well. Our friend Stephen Brunt, one of the co-hosts of Writer's Block, is with us next. Wishing you and yours the very best. Happy Thanksgiving. And we thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. The Thanksgiving Monday leadoff troll poll, Ziggy, at your recommendation, is a repeat of last Thursday's troll poll when we asked which Eastern Conference Canadian-based NHL team will be the next to make the second round of the NHL playoffs. Thursday, it was 61% Leafs, 24% Habs, 15% Sens. Post most of free agency and in the early stages of voting here on Twitter, 69% saying the Leafs, 16% saying the Sens, and 15% saying the Habs. So still heavy, heavy on the Maple Leafs. There you go. They're a tougher team now. Things are going to be different.
Who did you vote?
I did not vote for Ottawa.
Who was that?
That was Tucker Carlson.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Ottawa.
It's close.
Ottawa is north of Toronto, right, Ziggy? One of those geographic lessons again. We'll get that on a T-shirt.
Yes, it is north.
Ottawa is north of Toronto. Did the Leafs truly get better over the weekend? Ziggy says, yes. I say, we'll wait and see, because we thought they got better last year when they brought Tyson Barrie in. And it is now incumbent upon the Big Four to go out and perform. We'll discuss that, get into some baseball playoffs, the NFL stuff that's going on as well. Stephen Brunt, one of the co-hosts of Writer's Block, 3 to 5 Eastern Time each and every weekday here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan is with us for his weekly Monday visit. Are you a pro-turkey guy? Are you an anti-turkey guy? Are you pro-cranberry sauce, anti-cranberry sauce? Where are you with the goodies this weekend?
It's kind of a moot point this year, yeah. Unless it was a really little tiny turkey. I I'm all for it if somebody else cooks it.
Yes.
They're a pain in the ass to cook. There's a lot of stuff you got to think about and worry about. If you get it wrong, it's dry and horrible. If you get it wrong the other way, you die of salmonella. So, yeah.
If you had to cook one part of a meal, what would you cook?
Happy holidays.
If you had to take care of one part, what would you take care of?
I'll make the gravy. Yeah, I can do that.
God, I don't even know how to do that. Now that I think about it,
I was like, I'll take care of the booze.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
There is that. Yeah.
I'll make the stop at the Lickbo on Saturday and stash up and bring it on over. Steven, look, Ziggy and I had a long conversation in the first hour about the moves that Kyle Dubas made, and it's inarguable that he has changed how this thing looks around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
They're tougher. We believe Simmons, Bogosian, TJ Brody isn't afraid to muck it up. The question is, are they better? And I would think at this point it is incumbent upon the Big Four to take that next step as a group. The expectations heading into this next season should be high, and they will be high. Otherwise, they're going to have to start chipping away, I think, at the core.
Yeah, well, even that is easier said than done. But yeah, the die was cast heading into this. The die has been cast for a while in terms of, because of the cap and because of now the forever flat cap, and because of the commitment you made to the Big Four guys, that you're going to be you have to work around the edges. To do anything beyond that is almost starting from scratch. So, and I'm not sure how you would even accomplish that if you wanted to accomplish it now. So, yeah, it's going to be, I think by definition, it's going to be working around the edges and trying to find complementary pieces that you can fit in under the cap barely, and see if the combination, if the new combination is better than the old combination. I think your wait and see attitude is appropriate. In theory, they're better. In theory, they're a little grittier, et cetera, et cetera. But I applaud them. I applaud Kyle Dubas for the creativity he showed to make this happen, given the cap situation. And I'm not sure you could have asked much more for him. You can't do, the Peter Angelo move is not possible, really. And so aside from that, what was available to him and what else could he do? And I think he did a fair bit, just like not very, very little room to maneuver here. So he had to be creative, had to take what was out there, had to find guys who wanted to play in Toronto. He seems to have done all of the above.
What do you think their Leafs are still going to do down the middle? Because there's a lot of talk around Kerfoot. He's better winger, still slotted in that third spot for center at the Leafs. You think Kyle Dubas is done at this point, or you think you can still figure a way to make this team better?
Well, again, you have to make a decision whether, Kerfoot's going to be your third line center and whether you can live with that. But if he's not, again, it's just so tricky right now to, find somebody else to take on salary and then to find the appropriate replacement, trading. It's almost, you almost have to trade like for like in terms of money right now. It's just, mm-hmm. there are teams that can take on salary right now that are not going to be capped out. But most of those teams are trying to spend as little as possible this year. And if they're going to use that to their advantage, if they're going to take on money in a non-contending situation, they're going to want something back for that. So, they can try, but I don't anticipate anything very dramatic, to be honest, between now and whenever camp starts. That mystery date when they get started, none of us have any idea when that actually is. But this is such a bizarro, obviously. This is a bizarro time in all aspects, but in terms of hockey, the cap, teams' revenue situations, trying to project their revenue situations because they have no idea if they're going to be able to sell one ticket next season, the kind of financial straits that some owners are going to be in, how much money they're going to be willing to take on, the fact you have a cap that's based on an artificial number now has nothing to do with the actual money coming in. It's a negotiated number, but it's not You know, it's not the cap system we've been used to, which is about a percentage of revenues. No, like nobody knows. So I think we're in a situation where I can't, you know, I can't imagine anybody doing anything, you know, too rash. The Taylor Hall signing is really interesting in that context, right? 1 year to a non-contending team that is desperate to make the playoffs, that has a new front office, an inexperienced front office, you know, but Hall obviously not having better options and hedging his own bets. Like, that tells you everything about where we are right now in, you know, the fall of 2020, looking ahead. You know, there's so much uncertainty that not a lot of, you know, not a lot of folks are going to have the opportunity to make kind of, like, this is where, you know, I don't know where Peter Angelo is going to land either. I just think it's a, you know, it's a bad time to be kind of trying to line up your lifetime contract.
Well, yeah, on the Hall front, I mean, I think the one thing, and you were pointing out the 20% escrow and all that, a one-year $8 million deal for Taylor Hall is really what, my math is terrible, Stephen, in the 6.5 range once you knock off the escrow, which the players won't get back. I mean, that could be because, as you said, the $81.5 million salary cap is an artificial number. There's no way hockey-related revenue will get to a point, grow to a point, that they get any percent of what is clawed back in return. I, without knowing, my assumption is that offer by Buffalo on a short term must so far and away must have so far and away exceeded every other offer he got. Or if he was getting anything with term, it must have been in the range that he wasn't comfortable taking. Because,
yeah,
I mean, I'm not going to speak for Taylor Hall here, but and I assume that you play hockey because you want to win. But his goal is to score 25 plus, maybe 30 plus goals next year, score 60 or more points, and whatever happens around him happens around him. But it's an individual year for Taylor Hall.
Well, that's, you know, it's the betting on yourself scenario, sort of. You know, like, I've got to bet on myself for a year, try and put up some numbers, and then cash in when the world's better, right? That's I guess that's how you would, you and your agent would justify it to yourselves and say that's okay. But does that seem like the best situation for him to do all of those things? What it seems like to me is the only situation available to him that he could live with for a year. But, you know, again, going to an organization where there's tons of, like, I'm not slagging Buffalo here, but honest to God, like, you know, is the, are they closer to the dawn here? Like, are they? I have no idea. They've, you know, they've been walking in the wilderness for what, 9 years? There's chaos at the top. You know, I think the owners are having some issues in their other businesses. There's, you know, all kinds of things that would suggest that that is not the most stable platform from which to, you know, put up a ton of numbers and then cash in a year later. But I'm guessing he didn't have a better alternative. It's the only assumption you can make, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if he would have gotten anything in the $8 million range from anybody else. So you go there, you score 25 or 30. You don't care about your plus minus or any of those old school statistics and team record. It's a bonus if you sneak into the playoffs. We were talking last hour. I mean, there's five teams, you would argue, I think, Stephen, that are locks for the Eastern Conference playoffs. If you want to throw the Maple Leafs in there, let's make it six. All of a sudden, you're fighting over scraps, the final two spots, right? Probably the wild card spots. So, I mean, if that's your starting point and you're the Buffalo Sabres and you're Taylor Hall in particular, it's going to be a tough slog. So I think it's a year about individual stats and then seeing if he can't somehow get term and dollar in a slightly, I don't want to say better environment, because I think we're still going to be in the same environment a year from now. But take your chances, and maybe there's a team with a need out there that hooks you in.
I just assume if he had anywhere else to go, he would have gone there. And again, that's just for all of the reasons you suggested. From Buffalo's point of view, if you have the money burning a hole in your pocket,
spend
and you're desperate, you might as well do it, I guess, if you can. But, you know, remember, you know, Hall's, I believe, you know, the noise coming out of his camp right off at the beginning of this and through all this was that he wanted to go play for a contending team. I don't believe he's doing that.
Well, and if I'm Kevin Adams, I'm looking at my predecessor, Jason Botterill, who gave Jeff Skinner the world and not wanting to get locked in with a second winger on a term and dollar figure at that amount. I mean, that's yep. just the conclusion that I would draw off of that.
I think he's got to win, though. I don't think it's a year where you can just go and say, okay, go. I need to go and get 30 goals, and I'm going to sign somewhere.
But how can
I think
you?
He's got to win.
It's four
teams now in 10 years.
But how do you lay that on an individual player in a team sport?
Yeah, I just I don't like the narrative where it's like, oh, I'm just going to sign a 1-year deal and going to go and get my goals and get my cookies, and some team's going to sign me to a big deal. I think they're going to look to see what impact he has on the Sabres. Am I wrong, Steven?
Well, do you think, Steven, that his performance in Arizona helps to drive that narrative? It was almost forgivable in Edmonton because it seemed such a mess around him. But the fact that he had one really good year in New Jersey, then they went bad again. He goes to Arizona, expected to be a difference maker. He's acquired before Christmas, and he really wasn't much, if anything, for them.
No. No, it is a lot to ask one guy to lift the team. In Buffalo, he's not alone, obviously, and Eichel had a great year last year, and there, you know, there are moments, you know, and maybe they're on the verge, right? Maybe they're on the verge of getting better, and he will be able to ride that and be part of it. And if they get into the playoffs, yeah, that won't hurt, you know, in terms of whatever his market is going to be at the end of this season. But you know, again, if there were places that he could have gone where he could have been, you know, basked in team success and played with better players and enhanced his value that way, I'm sure he would have done it.
Stephen Brunt with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You had an opportunity as a younger man, Stephen, to watch Muhammad Ali and to live through his very impactful time. We have lived through the Colin Kaepernick time. I'm not necessarily comparing the two, but I'm thinking of big names who have taken important stances on social justice and race matters. LeBron James last night becoming the first NBA player in history to be the best player to win a championship with three different franchises on which he was the best player. Will we look back at LeBron James in 20 or 30 years as that combination of athletic excellence and as a beacon of social justice? Will he be in that pantheon?
Yeah, I think he will be. You know, again, it's hard to compare. You know, it's kind of a tricky one to kind of rate, you know, people's social awareness or political awareness or impact or their willingness to do that, because you know, it's not mandatory to be to take a political position as a professional athlete. You know, it is an individual decision, and I don't expect everybody to be Muhammad Ali or everybody, you know, even to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But I think LeBron, you know, there will be. I think some people from a basketball point of view feel a bit of LeBron fatigue just because, oh, there he goes and he did it again, right? And yeah, he chose his own situation and goes in and wins another championship. I think sometimes, you know, athletes in their own time, we get a little, you know, kind of hardened to how good they are. That was true with, you know, honest to God, that was true with Ali at times during the later stages of his career, when he was still the champion, when he was kind of just hanging on. And it was, you know, like I remember when he lost to Leon Spinks, there was a bit of a thrill to it almost, you know, finally he, you know, he lost to somebody, he wasn't the champion anymore. It was only afterwards he went and said, oh my God, he's not the champion anymore. You know, it's over. Although he did come back and win it back. But I think that's the way it's going to be with LeBron, you know, that it's going to take a bit of a step back. And, you know, maybe it's only going to be afterwards where you understand where he ranks in terms of the greatest athlete you've ever seen in your lifetime, number one. And also, again, somebody who was willing in reasonably tumultuous times to step up and to say things and to take a stand and to use his platform to try and make the world better. You know, that sounds kind of Pollyanna-ish, but that's the way I would frame it. So... yeah, I think he's the most significant athlete of our time, period. You know, we can have a debate about that, but I actually think it's not that much of a debate. I think he's kind of stands alone.
I want your take on the Lakers' win this year, because you can make the case that this was a year they had it easy on the run to the finals, in the finals. You know, you have no KD, no Clay or Steph in the playoffs. You avoided the Bucks. You avoided the Clippers, which is the big one. The Raptors, you can throw them in. Was this an easier year to win for the Lakers?
You can only play who they put in front of you, right? So you can do that almost with – you can do that about the Raptors last year and what was left of the Golden State Warriors by the time they beat them. You know, yeah, and none of us want to do that, right? Like, you know, I don't want to roll back and say, well, you know, if Durant doesn't come back and then blow out his Achilles, that could have been a different series. Or if Klay Thompson doesn't get hurt, or, you know, like, pick your – you know, you can always do that. I think you can only beat what's in front of you. I'm disappointed we didn't get to see the Clippers-Lakers Western Conference Final. I think that would have been fun for a bunch of reasons. But, you know, the Clippers, that's on the Clippers. That's not on LeBron. So I think you face the challenges, and, you know, it's not always going to be the top-ranked teams that come through in the playoffs. And I think given... You know, I was thinking last night watching as I was flipping around. Pretty extraordinary sports night last night, by the way. It was a lot going on. But, you know, watching them finally wrap it up last night and thinking, you know, it seems like a million years ago that those guys went into the bubble. Like, mm-hmm. how long ago does that seem when that, you know, the Raptors and their bus were driving inside the bubble in Orlando? This is a year like no other, obviously. It's now a cliche. But I think dealing with everything that came at them and having to be, you know, and being that guy, being the kind of the spokesman, the guy at the front, the guy everybody asks the questions of, not just about basketball, but of the world, and beating, you know, kind of pushing back every challenge that was put in front of them. And you can't argue. Like, I don't think there's an argument that they're the best basketball team in the world right now. So, yeah, I think there's no asterisk involved on any, in any aspect on this. I think it's the real deal. And I think his greatness is something that'll probably only become fully clear to us, you know, after he's retired and we're looking at who's still playing.
With Stephen Brunt, last one for you, and we're a little bit up against the clock, but it's Thanksgiving, so we're happy to go over. And I am going to bring this up with John Paul Morosi in the next segment. Yes. I don't want to be Debbie Downer on a Monday morning, Stephen, but I did not think Game 5 of the Yankees-Rays series was particularly entertaining. And the reaction that I witnessed on social media and articles I read suggested to the contrary. But what I saw was 3 solo home runs. I am fascinated by anybody's ability, and I appreciate anybody's ability to throw 100 miles an hour plus. But that does not lead to a lot of contact, which does not lead to a lot of activity during the game. And if it wasn't for the intensity and the pressure of a do or die, win and move on, lose and go home, fifth and final playoff game between 2 division rivals, I probably would have turned that thing off in the second inning. Did you think it was a good, entertaining, and enjoyable game, Yankees-Rays Game 5?
Yeah, I did, and I thought last night was too. You know, because it's postseason baseball, right? It's different, and you do get those kind of games in the postseason sometimes, and it does. You know, especially in this weird, you know, the 5 games in 5 days scenario, where we now may be into the 7 games in 7 days scenario. Like, there are, I think it's a really interesting challenge. We're seeing something we've never seen before, you know, about how you manage pitching through a series with no off days. And, you know, in that case, two very different teams in the Yankees and the Rays, and some of the, you know, you have to kind of buy into the backstory a little bit, but I'm willing to do that. You know, I've done that my whole life, watching sports or writing about sports. So I thought it felt like a playoff game. And that's kind of all I'm asking for right now. I thought last night felt like a playoff game. You know, And because you were not just watching last night's game and thinking about who's going to win, or how did Tampa win that game? How did they get through when Blake Snell didn't have his best stuff? And, you know, but you're thinking about, again, how are you going to get through 3 more wins? How are you going to get through potentially 7 games in 7 days? How are you going to manage your bullpen you know, how are you going to manage starters coming back in this series if, you know, your rotation is really only three guys deep? Those are baseball conversations. And slightly different baseball conversations than we would normally have around a best of seven. So, yeah, if I've got to think along with Kevin Cash, that means I'm engaged with baseball, and that means that, you know, we're living in our pretend world for a little while of sport rather than the other world. And that's, I'll take it, man. I'll take it. To me, it felt like the playoffs. And, you know, some playoff games are 14-13 and some are, you know, 2-1. It happens.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. If you're having turkey, enjoy it. And if you're not, then don't. But if you are, don't cook it. Doesn't sound like you enjoy that. So,
yeah, thank you very much.
Happy Thanksgiving. Always good to hear
Happy
your voice.
Happy Thanksgiving, all. See you guys.
Stephen Brunt, the co-host of Writer's Block, 3 to 5 Eastern time here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm in with Kevin Barker at 2 o'clock this afternoon for Baseball Central. Do you think Barks?
Yes.
Do you think Barks is going to tolerate my take on Game 5 of the Yankees Rays?
No, I think he's going to agree with you. I think he's going to agree with you.
You think he's going to agree with me? Okay. Yeah. Let's see what John Paul Morosi thinks.
I think he'll disagree with you.
He is going to disagree with me. He's going to disagree. We'll find out for sure next. Ross Tucker at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Christopher Stieg on the state of the Maple Leafs. Looking forward to this about an hour from now. John Paul Morosi of MLB Network and Sirius XM Radio is with us for his weekly Monday hit. Where do we find you this week? Are you still in Arlington? Where are you at? I don't even know where you are anymore. I can't follow you around.
Well, I barely know my friends, but where I am right now is I am now fully ensconced in the quarantine. So I covered the Dodger-Padre series as a free man, which is amazing. And now I am in the hotel, and I am here until I clear quarantine, I believe, on Friday or Saturday. So I'm allowed a moment of exercise outside every day. But aside from that, I am here in the hotel studying my Spanish and watching baseball.
Well, it's always good to be ensconced. And now you've given me a word to look up, so I'm looking forward to doing that. I got to study English while you're studying Spanish. What are the rules, John? What are the rules of the quarantine? Just because, I mean, we say these words now in the pandemic universe, but I don't think we think about what that looks like over a 24-hour period. What do you do? What are you able to do when you're awake?
Well, I appreciate the question. Yesterday, I watched a lot of soccer. I watched Italy-Poland. I watched England-Belgium. So what I'm able to do is not much, candidly. I order either groceries via the app so that they can bring the groceries to the hotel, and then someone from the front desk can bring it up to me. I cannot actually sort of interface with anybody from the hotel. They want me to just stay away from everybody. So it's all contactless. They'll bring up food, knock on the door. I wait a little bit of time before they leave, and then I go get it. So it's ordering food from the room, either groceries or room service. And then I get up to 1 hour of exercise a day. So I'm staying pretty close here to the ballpark in Arlington. So I just kind of run around. There's a couple nice little trails here. I can run around the stadiums. Yesterday, of course, the Cowboys played across the parking lot. And thoughts, first of all, with Dak Prescott after that terrible injury. Hopefully he's on the road to recovery here in the months to come. But, it's certainly a little surreal. I mean, to be next to, tonight, the NLCS will open. I'll be able to see the stadium, but I'm not able to go because the idea is that once I get through this week, and the reason why that I'm doing this is that by the end of the week, assuming I pass all my tests, that I'll be able to then get onto the field for the World Series and then be able to do these socially distanced interviews with players that you may have seen here on the air recently. So that's the reason why I'm doing this. So I did the first round but I covered it from the upper tier of the stadium, so I was, you know, wasn't able to actually cover interviews in person. It was all over Zooms. And so the idea is that by doing this week in the room, that I'll be able to actually get on the field and talk with people, which, of course, is, as you guys know, is the best part about the job. So I'm eager to do that. I've not been able to actually have a live in-person baseball conversation with anybody this year, which I'm excited to have in a week. But for now, it's just, as I mentioned, a lot of Spanish study, a lot of soccer and baseball watching, and getting to talk to you guys on a Monday morning, which is a really welcome bit of normalcy. There's a lot of things that are different right now about my routine, but the fact that I get to talk to you guys is great.
John Paul Morosi is with us on it from MLB Network. And John, we're just going to reconnect on the cell phone with you there, because we're here. It's so hard to measure bad cell phone, Ziggy.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's distorted and crapping out, that's an easy decision, right? Got to reconnect. But when
it's the 50-50s.
But when you can hear the voice clearly, but it's got that like staticky thing going on in the background, the popping, it's you should see the debate that goes on. You and I are making hand signals to each other.
I'm
over
like,
FaceTime.
I can't hear over here. I can't hear it.
I'm like a third base coach with Silent Vic. I'm like, what are we doing? I'm throwing my hands up, I'm touching my nose. I'm giving him signs. Like, what are we going to do? And now I'm waiting for the thumbs up. I'm waiting for the thumbs up
back.
That John Palmer. Well, we might be trying the hotel landline.
So he's quarantining. Well, is that just because you're changing states? Like, how is it working?
No, he's been in Texas for a while. But what he's doing is he's quarantining, he said, in order to be able to get down on the field in the World Series to do those dugout side interviews with the managers in game. Presumably a player or two or whatever the case may be. So he covered last series from way up high. They wouldn't let him close.
So this is just another layer of security for the players. Okay, anybody that's going to be kind of near them or on the floor, we're going to make them sit in a hotel for a week.
That's okay. Right. John Paul Morosi is back. Hopefully on a better... There we go. You sound loud and clear. I love it.
It's a new John.
All right.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
I don't want to sound like a grumpy wump, but I'm going to be a grumpy wump on Canadian Thanksgiving Monday.
Happy Thanksgiving, by the way. I'm sorry. How rude of me to not wish Happy Thanksgiving at the outset, but my mistake.
I'm a little
happy
upset.
Thanksgiving to you guys and everybody.
Well, it was funny. The entire time that we were reconnecting with you, we were complaining about that. You know, mm-hmm. So we're going to let you have it. We're going to let you have it, but only behind your back. I feel like I'm alone on this, and that's okay. If it wasn't for the intensity and the pressure of the win and move on, lose and go home element of game 5 between the Yankees and Rays, I don't think there would have been much to speak about in that game. There were 3 solo home runs. I absolutely, John, can appreciate people who throw 100+. I mean, it's a terrific skill that a lot of relievers seem to possess in this day and age. I just thought the game, it just kind of plodded for me. Am I missing what was so great about that game 5 decider between the Yankees and the Rays?
Well, that's a fair point. And the games, I think that the larger point to talk about, which you're hitting on here, is that there was a school of thought when this season began that without fans in the stands, that perhaps the games would pick up the pace, that there would not be delays for fans collecting foul balls or maybe the walk-up music would be not as involved, and everything would be a little bit crisper. And in fact, that was not the case. The games this year took longer than ever, as according to what I recall seeing. And so that's a concern. It is. And obviously, to your point, it's not necessarily the pace of or the duration of play, rather, but how much action there is and how many strikeouts there are. This is we have become a strikeout, walk, home run sport. And I think that's a concern. And there are ways to maybe get at it. I have been of the mind, as sacrilegious as people may think this is, I'm actually fully supportive of it, let's start counts at 1-1. Let's start counts at 1-1, and let's encourage a little more activity that way. I think that we've got to do some things to put the ball in play more. I've made this point before. My favorite teams to cover in recent years was the 15 Kansas City Royals, who put the ball in play all the time and almost never struck out and almost never hit home runs, by the way. But they hit doubles and triples and put the ball in play and were very athletic. That kind of baseball is what I like. And I do think that there are going to have to be some ways to look at the game in a really disruptive manner that hopefully get us to a point where the ball's in play more often. You know, I want to applaud MLB and the union for the work they've done this year just to get the game back on the field. But I think that now as we look to the future, we've got to be even more creative about presenting the game and really drawing people back into the ballpark with a really captivating product. And I really think, guys, that right now the product in a lot of ways could become more captivating with more balls in play.
Do you think that the condensed schedule in the playoffs is really starting to show just the strain it's putting on the bullpens?
Yes, I do, Ziggy. I think that we'll get to a spot, and it's really interesting. I think in some ways that this format, if you have a really strong pen and a really deep pitching staff, you're okay with this format. And that I think it's going to favor the Dodgers in the National League side. And I think that the Astros have been really impressive in their resourcefulness to get to this far, and they easily could have won the game last night. But the Rays, I think, have the better group. I mean, they didn't even have to throw Anderson and Fairbanks last night. They still won the game. So I think that this is clearly – and Kevin Cash is just – I think that showed – last night's game showed how you now move from the best of five to the best of seven mentality. Cash did not want to throw those two guys, Fairbanks or Anderson, and he put Loop into the game facing righties. Obviously faced a lefty to begin with, but then faced some righties. And I think that just shows that a seven-game series, to that question, Mike, it really favors the teams that truly have the depth. And I think the Rays truly have pitching depth, and the Dodgers do as well. The Braves have some, but the Dodgers have more. And for that reason, I think it looks at the moment. I realize, you know, it's the game one winner there for the Braves, but they just have more depth right now than the Astros do, and the Dodgers have more depth than the Braves do. And I think from that standpoint, I'd be hard-pressed to make a prediction that went against those two teams winning.
Loopy hitting a batter last night was everything a 2015 – Toronto Blue Jays fan needed to see, though. John, we have seen Loopy nick a few in our
just like. Well, yes, and we all have, and the only thing that was missing was John Gibbons narrating the whole thing.
Yeah,
that would have made it even better.
Hey, Loopy, you see that pentagon shaped thingy? Throw it over that, you know. Batter's box chalk lines, you know, for the baseball.
To your point about Atlanta, and it's a Canadian angle, John, it sucks that Mike Soroka's not able to, you know, he's done for the year and probably into early next year at the least with the torn Achilles. 22, 23-year-old young Canadian Calgary boy, ace of the Atlanta staff. The fact they don't have him, that gets to the depth issue you were talking about.
It really does. Now they've had some guys come up. Ian Anderson, of course, from upstate New York, he has been tremendous. He's from the Albany area, and really has not yet given up an earned run during these playoffs. So he's been tremendous, and he'll get the start in game two. Max Fried gets the start tonight. He's a fun story, of course, from Los Angeles himself. And I asked him the question yesterday on one of the Zooms. I said, who'd you grow up following? Who are your favorite players as a kid? And he said Clayton Kershaw and Cole Hamels. Gives you an idea how young he is. And, of course, he's facing the Dodgers. And he said it in a really respectful way, like I've said this before, and so I'm somewhat obliged to give the answer the same way. But, yeah, Clayton Kershaw, which is kind of interesting. And so he'll pitch game one. They'll have Anderson in two. Kyle Wright, who really struggled with location in command a lot this year, but then was able to put it together towards the end of the season and against the Marlins. So that's really encouraging. And so, yeah, I agree. If they've got Soroka, different conversation. You do have on this Canadian Thanksgiving celebration, you've got a Canadian GM and our friend Alex Anthopoulos. And then Freddie Freeman, who, of course, is a dual citizen. Both his parents are Canadian. They represented Canada at the World Baseball Classic. So you will have, I think, very possibly a Canadian-born NL or a Canadian citizen as the NL MVP with Freddie Freeman this year, and he's been tremendous for the Braves.
Good to hear your voice loud and clear, John. We'll talk again next Monday. Stay safe in the quarantine and eat some turkey if they'll serve it to you room service.
I appreciate it. Enjoy the great Harvard grad Jimmy Vesey there in Toronto. And I got to say, I like Stevie Y's moves. It's incremental. Bobby Ryan is going to be a great goal scorer for the Red Wings this year. And John Merrill comes home. I love it.
Yep. I was waiting for that.
There it is. Vladislav Nemestikov, pretty good too. That's my last thing of the day.
I was going to say it, and then I remembered we had the drop from Big Voice Guy. Stick to baseball.
Thanks so much, guys.
Stick to baseball. That's got to be an auto block on Twitter. John Paul Morosi, our good buddy with us each and every Monday morning here on Leadoff and down in Texas in the quarantine as he watches on TV and gets sets to cover the World Series. Ross Tucker at the top of the hour. Christopher Stieg on the situation with the Maple Leafs. Busy in free agency. Did they truly get better? And I think it's all at the feet now. If it wasn't before, it certainly is now of the Big Four. They got to take that next step. Hugh jumps into studio for what you're watching and get some Baileys in your coffee. He's going to take us through the revamped NFL sched. More than a half a dozen teams have been affected schedule-wise by COVID outbreaks on two teams in the NFL. Make sense? Hugh will explain next. Ross Tucker at the top of the hour. Take us through week five of the NFL. The Dak Prescott situation, so sad, and so much more. Hugh Burrell is in studio for what you watching. Now, I've got some Baileys in my coffee.
Oh, you're going to need it.
I'm going to get dizzy here as you take us through the revamped NFL schedule thanks to all the COVID stuff.
Yeah, you may want to pop a Tylenol or two as well, because this stuff will give you a headache. Okay, here we go. Denver's game at New England, originally scheduled for yesterday, but then moved to tonight, will now be played next Sunday. The move coming after the Patriots had one positive test for COVID-19 yesterday. Now, Kansas City's game at Buffalo, which was supposed to be played this Thursday, has been moved to next Monday.
Nice.
Tomorrow's game with the Bills and the Titans,
what?
Originally was to be played Sunday, does indeed remain on the schedule. So it is Bills and Titans tomorrow for now. That was supposed to be part of a doubleheader, Monday night doubleheader tonight.
By the way,
with the Rams and the Saints.
Baseball's playoffs are loving all of this, loving all of this,
are
right?
Are they ever? Because you know when the games are going to be played in baseball.
Well, and they don't want to go up against the NFL, and the NFL keeps moving games.
It's a shell game right now. It's all right, other changes. Write these down. There will be a test. The Jets at the Chargers moves from week 6 all the way to week 11. Jaguars and Chargers moves from week 8 back to week 7. Chargers and Broncos from 11 to week 8. Chargers and Dolphins moves from 7 to 10, and the Dolphins at the Broncos moves from week 6 to week 11. So a lot of these are bye weeks that are now being used to reschedule these games because they can't be played right now.
So look at where you started in all of that, Hugh, and where you ended up. Chargers, Broncos, Dolphins, look how affected they are by other teams' COVID outbreaks.
By the Titans and the Patriots, for sure. These are the Titans closed their facility yesterday. It's unbelievable what's happening right now. Speaking of baseball, what are you watching tonight? Astros and Rays.
Sorry, who's on Monday Night Football? It's just like the seventh time that tonight's game got changed. Who is it? Chargers Saints tonight?
It's Chargers Saints tonight, yeah.
I'll be into that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And then
all over that.
Braves and Dodgers at 8. Chargers and Saints at 8:15. Yep. Braves and Dodgers are going to be a good series.
Yeah, I really think L.A. is going to take it. Not having Soroka hurts Atlanta, but they are the two best teams.
Yeah.
I mean, by rights, they are deserving of being there.
Yeah, and everybody thought the Dodgers would make it. Anyway, the Astros and Rays play game 2 of their series this afternoon, 4:07. Both those ball games are on Sportsnet, by the way. So there you go.
I'm still confused over the NFL schedule.
Yeah.
The NFL, that's a lot of changes. And the craziest part about it is that it's probably not going to stay that way. So it's like...
Yeah, you're right. It's a lot of changes for now.
There's going to be more changes. There's going to be even more.
Well, and the other thing that we don't know is which players end up being compromised. They might be back on the field because they're not COVID positive anymore. But like, what if they're not...
Yeah, they're
100%
lingering effects, and obviously these guys are, you know, world class athletes, so maybe the lingering effects don't affect them as much, but there's going to be fallout from this for sure.
We'll get Ross Tucker's thoughts on that. We'll get his thoughts on the Dak Prescott tragic injury yesterday. Cleveland is 4-1 after a big win at home against Indianapolis. We'll delve into that. And what do we make of the Kansas City Chiefs and also the Las Vegas Raiders after the Raiders put up 40-1 at Arrowhead? It's all ahead with Ross Tucker for his weekly Monday hit next. Christopher Stieg coming up at 8:30 in Leafs free agency and general NHL free agency. We'll talk Taylor Hall to Buffalo as well. That going down yesterday. A lot to get to. Week 5 in the NFL. We've got COVID-related schedule changes affecting teams that haven't even tested positive for the virus. That's no surprise. And a bunch of stories from yesterday's games. From the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Fantasy Feast Podcast, the Even Money Podcast, and maybe another one he's about to tell us. I don't know. Here he is, our buddy, Ross Tucker, for his weekly Monday morning hit. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I love it. Your name and all of them. I love it. If people like fantasy football, listen to Fantasy Feast. We'll give you the advice. If you like to put some money on the games, Even Money Podcast. And then if you just want to hear what's going on in the NFL every day, I do a 30-minute show every day called the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. And by the way, podcasts are free. Like, every once in a while, like, I'll talk to somebody like, how do you listen to a podcast? How much are they? I'm like, dude, it's free and you listen on your phone. It's crazy easy. It's like, it's just an app. It's really, really easy. Just check it out. You'll like it. It's on-demand audio.
Yeah, it's easy. You subscribe and then you download each new episode and you throw in your earbuds and you're good to go. I mean, it's the way of the world. Yeah. We have, like I said, a lot to get to, so we won't waste any time doing it. Let's start in Dallas, Dak Prescott. That, I mean, Ross, it's awful. It doesn't matter who you cheer for, whether you're a fan of a particular player or not, and there's no reason to dislike Dak. That's not where I'm going with this. You don't ever want to see that happen to a guy. Dallas ekes out a victory against the crappy Giants, but they lose their quarterback for the rest of the season. It's now the Andy Dalton show. Do the 2-3 Dallas Cowboys have what it takes without Dak to win that terrible division?
Yeah, I think they do. Now, certainly, I don't think Andy Dalton is as good as Dak, but he's definitely competent. He showed that yesterday in leading them to the come-from-behind win. And, you know, look, they're in first place right now. I don't think Washington or the New York Giants are much of a threat at all. So they're really just going to have to hold off the Philadelphia Eagles. And it feels like, you know, the first team to get to 8 wins is going to win that division, if they even get to 8 wins.
Dak, I'm not going to ask you to play doctor until you start the Dr. Ross podcast, but that's the type of injury. It's horrific to look at, Ross. It's hard to know whether he, when he comes back, will ever be the same. But that's what I worry about for him. And he left term and big dollar on the table to sign the tag and take a bet on himself. I don't think anybody's going to play the violin. He could live the rest of his life off the money he's making this year alone. But that injury could cost him tens of millions of dollars, couldn't it?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different things here, right? Number one, that is something that you are aware of. You know, the chance to suffer an injury like that, or frankly, even worse, right? Like something that leaves you paralyzed or whatever. You're aware that that is a possibility every time you take the field. And you know that it's not real likely that you're going to have a major injury like that, but it's also not like 1 or 2%, right? I mean, there's every week, you know, Chandler Jones torn bicep out for the year, DJ Reader. I mean, there are guys that suffer really bad injuries that cause them to have surgery and be out for the season all the time. Obviously, Dax was really graphic. So, number one, that is something that you are aware of every time you take the field as an NFL player. And Dak had never missed a game, but he's a smart guy. He has good representation. And when they turned down the offer from the Cowboys, the long-term offer of whatever it was, $33.5 million a year, $100 million guaranteed, that they turned it down knowing that there was a chance that he could suffer a serious injury that would affect his market value playing on just a one-year deal. And that's what happened. So everybody has to make the decisions in life that they feel like are best for them, given their risk tolerance. That's what Dak did. And unfortunately, I don't know if he'll ever get quite the same amount of money. Now, it sounds like he'll be able to make a full recovery, but the negotiations for next year are going to be tough. I don't know how they're going to do that because they're not going to really know what he's going to be like. They'll probably offer him about what they already offered him, and maybe at that point he'll just take it. But, you know, it's interesting, guys, because I would not have made the choice that I'm conservative, right? Like, I don't like to take on a lot of risk. So I would not have made the choice that Dak did, I don't think. I think I would have taken the best Cowboys offer, which was significant. And I also wouldn't make the choice, frankly, that Alex Smith made yesterday of going back out on a football field and putting that leg in harm's way again. You know, from the perspective of a 41-year-old with a couple kids, but Alex is very bright. He's talked to multiple doctors, and he's made the decision that there's either very little risk or no risk, and it's worth it to him. So I think these are all smart people that made the decisions they feel like is best for them and their family.
A lot of people are saying today, though, Ross, that the Cowboys should do right and sign Dak to another contract. Is there any responsibility on the organization to do that now?
Absolutely not. But I think that they will. There's no responsibility there, but I think as long as the rehab goes well, they think the surgery went well, I still think they want him to be their quarterback moving forward. But rather than the $40 to $45 million stratosphere that Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes occupy that Dak was on schedule for, I don't think they're going to do that without seeing how well he recovers from this injury, this surgery. I'm sure they'll offer him, you know, maybe even $35 million a year. And then it'll be up to Dak to say, okay, you know what, I saw what can happen. You're going to offer me that kind of security where I have $100 million fully guaranteed. I'm going to take it. Or maybe Dak says no. And I don't know, maybe the Cowboys let him walk and see what he can get. Or maybe they franchise tag him again. And he goes out there and does a one-year deal, and both sides get to see where he's at coming off this injury.
Ross Tucker is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It feels like it was about a year late, but it finally happened after the home loss to Carolina yesterday. The Falcons fire both their head coach, Dan Quinn, and the general manager, Thomas Dimitroff. Where do they go from here, Ross? And does Matt Ryan reach a breaking point with that franchise where he's looking to move on?
Well, so from here, I think they'll probably hire a GM first and then a head coach. They'll pair them together. I think that's the right way to do it so that there's no sort of infighting. Hey, you guys are in this together. You're tied at the hip. And I think it should be noted, guys, I actually think Dan Quinn and Dimitroff did a good job overall there. I mean, they got to a Super Bowl. They were up 28-3. Even the next year, they probably should have won that divisional round game in Philadelphia against the eventual Super Bowl champ, the Eagles, the year after the Super Bowl hangover. So they had a good run, but it had clearly run its course. And I think Blank did the right thing here by moving on from them, because why delay the inevitable, right? So I think he did the right thing. Sometimes things just, they just run their course. You're thinking about, like, the Eagles fired Andy Reid. And Andy Reid's gone to Kansas City. He's had great success. He's won a Super Bowl. So, but from here, they'll get a GM and a head coach. I do think your question about Matt Ryan's a really intriguing one, because depending on how they finish this year, right, what their record is, they could have a chance to draft one of these young quarterbacks. So it's really going to be up to the new GM and the new head coach to say, you know what? Let's use this as an opportunity to kind of reset and turn the page. That's a very real possibility. Or they could say, we actually have Matt Ryan at a relatively inexpensive contract, all things considered, and he's 35 years old, so we can probably get five more good years from him. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if somebody new came in and decided to trade Matt Ryan and kind of reset at that position.
Ross Tucker is with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Raiders beat Mahomes and the Chiefs yesterday, Ross. What did they do so well to be able to take Mahomes down?
You know, what's interesting to me about this is that this is the third game in which the Chiefs have been very vulnerable. I mean, they probably should have lost that Chargers game when it went to overtime. Then you think about the Patriots game, they're lucky that it was Brian Hoyer and that he made some of the mistakes he made. And then this game they did lose. I mean, so they are far from a perfect team right now. That's for sure, based on how they perform. That's three of their five games where they really haven't looked all that great. What the Raiders did offensively, I mean, you know, the Chiefs still scored 32 points, but what the Raiders did offensively is they dropped some bombs on them. I mean, they went up top to Henry Ruggs for two deep touchdowns, and then they ran it effectively with Josh Jacobs, Devontae Booker. The Raiders have a really good offensive line, and it showed. And then defensively, it just didn't seem like the Chiefs were ever to get firing on all cylinders, and Mahomes had that bad pick to Jeff Heath, kind of tried to force it in there, and that was a gigantic win for the Raiders in their playoff hopes. I thought before the year they'd be a playoff team. They needed that, certainly, to have a chance.
And we got to remember, too, Ross, that there is an extra wild card spot this year. So I think sometimes I get caught up in thinking of the traditional model where you have the four division winners and the two wild card teams. There's a third wild card spot in both conferences. So these 3-2 or 2-3 teams right now are very much alive. Some teams are trending in better directions than others, but all are very much alive. You know me, I'm a big 49ers fan. That has descended into a mess. And what went down yesterday has me wondering, Ross, is this strictly health-related, such that a 49ers fan could believe that with a return to full health next year, 2020 becomes a one-year aberration, or is there more to be worried about in San Francisco?
I think, in quotation marks, it is a one-year aberration, But I do think that there is some concern about Garoppolo when you look at how he played the first week against Arizona and how he played again yesterday. And they can say, oh, it's his ankle. It's not good, man. I mean, it's a couple games now where he has really struggled. And so I think it's a one-year aberration, with the exception of there being a little bit of concern there as it relates to Garoppolo.
Well, and Ross, they jammed the football down Minnesota's and Green Bay's throats in the playoffs last year with the run game. They took the ball out of Jimmy's hands back then. Does Shanahan believe in this guy at all?
I think he has his doubts, that's for sure. And yesterday only enhanced that. I really do. I think he has his doubts based on what Garoppolo did yesterday and in week one. I think even last year, you know, he did not want to put it, as you noted, did not really want to put it on Jimmy's shoulders. And now I think he's even more concerned.
And then up the coast in Seattle last night, it's funny. It's 10-0 Minnesota early in the game. And I used to be a Nighthawk, but this job doesn't allow me to be anymore. So I went to bed. And Ross, I knew I was going to wake up with a Seattle victory. Like it doesn't seem to matter. Russell Wilson, it doesn't matter how silly the uniforms look. Russell Wilson overcomes an iffy defense. He overcomes a bad uniform look. Whatever, whatever, whatever. Russell Wilson at the end of the day just gets it done, doesn't he?
He's unbelievable. Especially in those close game situations. You know, I said on the Even Money podcast, I like the Seahawks as part of a two-team teaser. And I thought, I don't know if they're going to be able to come back in this one. And then, I mean, for it to be 13-0 at halftime and then 21-13, you know, with, you know, 8 minutes left in the third quarter, it was incredible. I'll say this. I really give the Vikings a lot of credit to battle back after that and Adam Thielen get a couple more touchdowns. I thought that was impressive. But then you said exactly right. It just, I mean, it's not 100%, guys, but doesn't it seem like his conversion ratio in close games is unbelievably high? It's so impressive.
Are the Cleveland Browns for real? And if we're wondering whether the answer is still yes or no, will Sunday at Pittsburgh tell the tale?
Yes, I do think they're for real. And I think the Pittsburgh game will tell us more, but I mean, they're 4-1 and they've scored over 30 points in four straight games. And they just beat a Colts team that was 3-1. That's good enough for me. I mean, they are very, very impressive in a lot of different ways. I'm excited for the people of Cleveland. I'd be surprised they don't go to the playoffs this year. It's just the AFC North so tough. Pittsburgh's undefeated. We know what Baltimore is. It's rough.
With all the positive COVID tests going on in the NFL, games are being postponed, changed, weeks, you know, are changing right now. What's the NFL going to do to stop, I guess, all these COVID tests, or how can they, you know, regulate teams right now?
You know, I mean, they keep coming out with these new protocols and this is stricter and that's stricter. I think they have a problem. And the problem is that the testing is not immediate. Depending on where you are, the testing takes at least a full day to come back. So a guy could get the virus, you know, at night from his family or whatever, go in the next day, and because of the incubation period, not test positive, but be positive, and then go in there and maybe spread it to other people. And then afterwards, then he tests positive, but now he's been in there around other people. Now, it appears that that's only happened in Tennessee, but it seems like the delay in testing and the incubation period where it takes a few days to know whether or not guys have gotten it when they've been exposed to it, that is That's a problem. That's, and I don't know how they overcome that, because I guess the point of care test is not considered as accurate. I don't know. I don't know how they overcome that, to be honest with you.
Why don't they test the players on game days?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I don't think it really makes a difference. There hasn't been any evidence that you can spread it by playing football against somebody. You know, there's been no, like, hey, this team had it. You know, like Stephon Gilmore, right? He pretty clearly had it when the Patriots played the Chiefs that night. And you see him go up to Mahomes after the game. He was out there all game. Nobody for the Chiefs got it, right? Or so I think even some Titans players had it when they played Minnesota that one game. And no Minnesota guys got it. So I don't think that's really the concern. I think the concern is what happens when you are around other people away from the field or in the facility when you're when you could be within close proximity for an extended amount of time.
Give us the goods, Ross. Where can we find you?
At Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. I got a new YouTube page if you want to see what I look like. YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL. I have a huge head, so I lift my neck twice a week just so I don't look like a bobblehead doll. So for nothing else, go to YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL to see if my neck is big enough that it's preventing my head from looking like a bobblehead doll.
I like
that's
that.
My selling point for YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL.
All right.
Still doing the shrugs, probably, huh? From the playing days.
How different is your current weight from your playing weight?
I used to play like 315. I go to training camp between 320 and 325 and play at 315. This morning I was 248.
Good man.
I'm 41, so I'm trying to. My goal is to live in the 240s, but I've been bumming up against 250 lately. A few too many daddy sodas, as I call them, too many beers, and too many car. Like when I travel, I've been doing a lot of games. When I travel, it seems like I eat too many carbs. So maybe I'll start a new podcast of that. Just go to RossTucker.com. That's where all your wildest dreams will come true. RossTucker.com.
Love it. We'll talk next Monday, Ross. Thanks, pal.
See you guys.
Ross Tucker of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Fantasy Feast Podcast, the Even Money Podcast, and the Ross Tucker YouTube page. We got a really solid response to our troll poll question on Twitter. There's a write-in response, Ziggy. I'm going to wait for Christopher Stieg to join us in the next segment. The question, you can vote at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burl, at Fan 590. We asked this last Thursday. Now that most of free agency is in the books, we're reposting and reasking, which Eastern Conference Canadian-based NHL team will be the next to make the second round of the playoffs? The Leafs, the Senators, or the Habs? We'll get into the votes, and we'll get into that one reply next. So, Ziggy, I want to reset the Twitter troll poll results from Thursday when we asked this. And the poll was up for 24 hours. The question on Thursday, pre-free agency, which Canadian-based Eastern Conference NHL team would be the next to make the second round of the playoffs? 61% of respondents said the Maple Leafs, 24% said the Habs, 15% said the Sens. We've got more than 500 votes over the course of the show this morning, in the re-ask, 70% saying Leafs, so that's a 9% jump. 18% are saying the Habs, so that's a 6% decline for them. 12% saying the Sens, that's a 3% decline for them. People are loving the Leafs more today than they did last Thursday.
I think they improved.
Well, we'll have that.
They got better. They got a little bit tougher.
Say the word.
They got some crag.
I got some crag.
That's what we want. We want some crag. They got it.
How would Chris Versteeg vote in our poll? Well, why don't we ask him? Steger, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Is there no Western voters here?
So we have to get the write-in reply. So this really happened on the Twitter machine, Chris.
Okay.
Which Eastern Conference Canadian-based NHL team will be the next to make the second round of the playoffs? Leafs, Sens, or Habs? We got one write-in vote from Lenny Andrichuk. None of the above. Oilers.
That's a hardcore Oiler fan right there.
Yeah.
That's what I expected. I would actually think the Leafs would of the three.
The thing is, though, is the Oilers aren't in the Eastern Conference. So Lenny Andrichuk.
Nope. They just make up their own poll. Yeah.
All right, Lenny. Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. It's all good. Are you with Ziggy that you like the moves Kyle Dubas made? I don't have a problem with any of the moves that he's made. Here's the thing, though, and it could be my lifetime of psychological scarring as somebody who's cheered for this team, Chris, which is I'm in very much a wait and see here because we thought the Tyson Barrie move was going to work out. It was a fine trade at the time. It just happened not to. How can we be sure that these moves are going to propel this team into the next echelon in the NHL?
Yeah, you're right. First off, if I'm looking at that question in itself, the Leafs are the most likely next year to go to the second round. Are they? I don't know. Again, it's still a wait and see. The Senators are, to me, by far in the best place in 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now. And that's just what I feel and think. But going back to the moves, TJ Brody is an upgrade on Tyson Barrie for what the Leafs need. He's not obviously going to run a first power play unit, but the way he skates, the way he can manage the puck, the plays he can make, and defensively, he's an upgrade on Barrie in those facets of the game. So that's exciting. Again, how are their lines going to roll out? How are they going to have, you know, different looks coming at you each and every night? That's a wait and see as well. So far, I have liked what they've done. But again, like you say, you have to see going forward how these players are going to play within the system. Who's going to get used? Last year, they brought in Kyle Clifford. He was not used. He was underutilized. They brought in a player they thought they knew. They didn't use him properly. And so they brought in a truculent player. They brought in a hard player to play, and they didn't use him. So it always depends on how these players are now going to be used.
Yeah, it's important when you do get guys that have toughness in their game to actually play them a lot. But even a bigger thing, I was on Hockey Central Friday talking about this, is that you need guys to make other players play bigger. And I didn't know if you want to expand on that, because I'm trying to explain this to Scotty that doesn't really understand this part of the game. And
I'll just be sitting back here taking the knife out of my kidney, Versteegh. Don't worry. Yeah. I'll be all right.
I can't believe you've never played, man.
Yes, I'm a never player. I've never played. I have to cop to that.
But you know what? When you do talk about that, why do you think the Bruins have played so tough for so long?
Chara?
Right? Chara. That's it. You know, Chara, and then they would have Lucic and other guys kind of around them to insulate Chara so he didn't have to do all the heavy lifting in the tough game. And the game's obviously not like that anymore. But when you have guys of that physical stature or guys that are willing to back you, like in Chicago, we never had the toughest teams, but we had a bunch of guys that would jump in and get there for each other. It makes you play bigger. It makes you feel bigger. And it gives you a confidence that really you can't else have unless you have that type of player or those type of players on your team.
But the reality, Chris, of it I think, is you need to have those types of guys who are also talented with some skill. It's not, and with all due respect, it's not Colton Orr's or Fraser McLaren's game anymore. Right?
No, and you're right. And that's why Lucic, especially in that era from 2009 to 2016, where the game was still, they thought, you know, and the Kings were winning, it was bigger and more physical till it kind of shifted to more of like a skill game they always talk about. That being said, St. Louis did win with physicality, but when you have big players like Chara, Lucic, who can go out there, they can run you through the boards, and they can score goals. It's just so valuable. And then you look at St. Louis, they bring some of those players back into their team, the Shens and these guys that are going to get after you and keep you on your toes. And that's the thing. When I watched the Leafs play Columbus, every single shift, it was like Jones and Werenski were just wheeling around. Like the game was just a joke. It was like they're playing pond hockey. And then they got into the next round and they were on their heels. They sent out Goudreau. They sent out Coleman. They had guys hitting them and making them not want to wheel the puck. So what that does is it starts to put little doubts in players' brains, because they're like, these guys are coming. They're not going to stop coming. So I have to make plays quicker in these areas, where if you're just going to keep letting them roll and you're not going to finish them and you're not going to play hard on the playoffs, especially, they're just going to do what Jones and Werenski did all playoffs.
Christopher Stieg with us on Leadoff. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. This is Leadoff on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I want to ask you about the Leafs' back end. So you've got now a Riley, Brody, Muzzin, Bogosian, and Lehtinen coming overseas. What do you think's going to happen with that sixth spot between Hall and Dermott?
Yeah, I still think it's going to be Hall's to lose, just the way he's played. And I think he's been playing at times a little bit up in the lineup for what he's going to be. He is, to me, a real solid third pairing defenseman. And if he's slotted properly, he can play really well and be a very, very effective player each and every night. But he's got to find he's got to have the right guys ahead of him in order to fall into that role and be that effective player. But I think it'll be Hall's.
What about Rasmus Sandin? How does he fit into all of this?
I think it's going to depend on how Lehtinen does coming over. Is Lehtinen going to be the player, you know, because he's older and he's more experienced. He's played in a pro league for a long time. A very good pro league, and he's been a very good player. Can that translate when he comes over here? And if it doesn't, I think that might be Sandin's spot.
Taylor Hall gets $8 million from Buffalo, and I think that surprised absolutely everybody. What does this tell us about the market for Taylor Hall?
Well, I love Taylor Hall as a player. He's a great player, but when you're looking stat-wise, it's generally a 20-60 point, you know, 20 goals, 60 assists, 25 goals, you know, whatever you had in the MVP, or 25 or 28 goals somewhere in there, and then, you know, 80 assists, 670 assists. I don't know. He hasn't quite hit 100 yet, but the goals assist totals aren't exactly what you would think they were, the way when you speak of Taylor Hall. I know Anthony Stewart, I'm going to rip him here a little bit. We're on hockey, the free agency, and he's like, Taylor Hall, natural goal scorer. He's not a natural goal scorer. Just look at his stats. He's a natural playmaker. He tries to go for the goals, but the way it ends up, it generally ends up in an assist, the way he drives the net, the plays he'll make. So he's not a goal scorer. So when you're buying Taylor Hall, I think you got to understand you're going to get 3-1 in assists. So 3 assists to 1 goal, generally speaking. And also for me, I don't know if he's the guy to carry you to a championship. He's more the guy that would fall under a couple great players to help lift them up, like Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel is one of my great friends in the game, but he's not the guy who's going to win you a championship. He needs a couple other guys to insulate him, just the way he plays the game. He wants to focus on offense. And Taylor Hall being the exact same. He wants to focus on offense. He's not really going to penalty kill for you. He's not going to do those other situations, the guys like Kopitar and Jonathan Toews are. And that's where I see it. Maybe tell me if I'm wrong here, Mike.
No, I know exactly where you're going with this. We have this conversation quite a lot during the season. It's hard to figure out who those players are, right? Who are the guys that are going to carry your team? And, you know, who are the supporting cast? And it's not a knock against guys to say you're supporting cast. It's just some players just don't fit well in that role. And as a GM, you have to find out who those guys are. With Taylor Hall, though, Chris, what do you think his other offers were? Because no disrespect to Buffalo, but I don't think there was something even close to what he wanted from around the league.
Yeah, I would think that teams were offering, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3. I'm guessing, this is me speculating because I'm not an insider, I'm an analyst, but just looking at this, I'm speculating he was getting anywhere from 2 to 4 year deals at the $6 million range, you know, to $6 million range is kind of what I'm guessing. And Buffalo is like, look, we'll do 1 year, $8 million. It'll try to prolong you through this season. We'll see. They say it will be a hard cap. We'll see where the next season goes. And if you do well, we'll extend you at close to $8 million for maybe another 3 years or something, is kind of what I gathered from this. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't think the offers were out there. You know, Taylor Hall said he wants to win. I don't see Buffalo as, you know, contender in the Eastern Conference this year. So that's where it leads me to think that their offers weren't there. This was just the highest offer. And if he was going to do a 1 year deal, he might as well try to make some money.
And maybe get traded.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I don't like this get traded thing. Like, I think Taylor Hall, I think he has to, Steger, you let me know. I think he has to win. This is now 4 teams in 10 years. I think teams are going to look at him like, what's he going to do in Buffalo right now?
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the type of player he is. When you're comparing, like Phil Kessel, again, more of a goal scorer, but it's more the one-dimensional type of player, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting that type of player. Everyone says, and I've had this argument before, they're like, well, what about Patrick Kane? Well, Patrick Kane gets like 30 to 40 more points a year on average, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's more elite, and he's proved it in the playoffs. So it's not a comparison, you know, and even with Johnny Gaudreau too and Patrick Kane, the playoffs is a whole other thing. He goes to a whole other level in the playoffs, and he becomes an X factor in itself, where he doesn't even have to be a factor on the PK or other situations like that. So for me, he needs to find if he's the one-dimensional player in the way he finds offense, you need to find the fit that's going to bring that out of him and that's going to put him in the situations to be an X factor. And again, you look at Buffalo, obviously they're not going to be a contender. They might slip into the playoffs. They do have some talent and they actually have a pretty good lineup. But yeah, were the offers out there? Probably not. And if they were, I'm guessing they were low and they were probably with teams that weren't going to win.
With Christopher Stieg on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It feels like Alex Petrangelo's visit to Vegas, the only thing he hasn't done is laps in the Bellagio fountain. Is there something holding up the pen to paper on the deal with Vegas, or is there another team that could jump in? It feels a fait accompli, and yet it hasn't happened.
Well, I've heard Boston might be in there too. So,
all right.
But... are they waiting to trade another player? I think Vegas has been shopping a lot of players.
Nate Schmidt
and Pacioretty and guys like that. So, man, that would piss me off if I was those guys. If they're just throwing everyone out there and now it's in the media and then it's like, come back and play for us, you know? It's like, it's not just one or two guys that have been in the rumor mill for Vegas either. It's been a numerous amount of guys. So, I think what's holding it up at the moment is they're waiting to move one guy out to free up a little more cash, and then the deal will probably be done.
Yeah, I don't think the numbers are going to be that much better outside of what he was offered in St. Louis. That's just my guess right now. If it's taking this long, I just don't think he was going to get that much better of a contract for leaving St. Louis. And this is what the point I made to Scotty is that I don't see that happening. Maybe the structure can change, but if he takes longer than the weekend, he's not getting that much better of a deal because I don't know what he's waiting around for at this point.
Yeah, I still think it has to do with Vegas is like, well, here's the deal, and we got to move a guy or two guys out in order to finalize it. So that's kind of where my head was at, but you might be right.
Great stuff, Chris. Happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate you waking up early to do this with us, and we'll certainly reach out again very soon. Always look forward to the chat.
Yeah, for sure. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Christopher Stieg, former Leaf, and doing some work now with Sportsnet, one of our free agency analysts. Don't call him an insider, Ziggy. Very important terminology there.
Of course, I would never do that.
I'm still on Lenny Andrechuk on Twitter, saying the Oilers are going to be the next Eastern Conference Canadian-based team to make the playoffs. We need to give Lenny Andrechuk a geography lesson. We asked Eastern Conference.
I like what Edmonton did. Got Kyle Turris, bringing Tyler Ennis back.
See, the Barry thing,
you got to remember Tyson.
First power play.
Don't freak out if Tyson Barry, Leafs Nation, if Tyson Barry lights it up. Like, it can happen.
Well, we were talking about TJ Brody coming in here, and I think Versteeg made the point about, well, he's not going to run the first power play. Well, that was part of the issue with Barry, right? Morgan Riley runs, you're only playing with one defenseman on your power plays in this day and age. Morgan Riley was chewing up a lot of the power play time. I mean, Tyson Barry wasn't used like big he problem. Was used in Colorado.
I'm not going to keep beating this drum, but big problem last year was he was the guy in Colorado, and then he came to the Leafs, and he wasn't the guy. That's it. That's all it can take sometimes.
And he was moved out of Colorado because he was no longer going to be the guy.
The guy.
There you go. We'll get Hugh into studio. I need to take some tips from you on how to handle the double shift, too, because I'm on Baseball Central with Kevin Barker at 2 o'clock
this
afternoon.
I'll go over that with you. Yeah.
Hugh jumps in, and we get you set for good show next. Friedman coming up a little bit later today on Writer's Block. Baseball Central will be Kevin Barker's and my guest, Dan Shulman, 2:25. I'm in with Barker today as Jeff Blair enjoys a long weekend.
Look at you.
Are you staying in the studio till then, or are you going home?
I'm going home. I live 10 minutes away. I mean, it would be dumb to sit here alone for 5 hours, wouldn't it? I can go sit at home alone.
You got to do some prep work for this show.
Yeah. Well, of course.
5 hours should cover it.
5 hours, yes. 5 hours should cover a one-hour show where I gripe about game five between the Yankees and Rays and how boring it was.
So let's see. Time and a half just for Thanksgiving. Plus, you're doing a double on Thanksgiving. What's that? You're like making like 10 times the amount.
It's like a $40,000 day for me.
Yeah.
And I think there's like 16 and a half vacation days on. It's pretty... pretty good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Did you nap in between shows on Friday, Ziggy, when you did?
No.
No?
I don't nap.
You don't nap. Do you sleep?
At night?
Are you like Brett Laurie? Brett Laurie's the one person on this planet who I could never picture sleeping. Oh, remember Brett Laurie?
The Red Bulls. Yeah, I remember it.
How could you? Yeah, buddy.
I napped when I played, but not now. Since I stopped, I think I wasted all my naps during my career.
Yeah. It's just like there's a quota. You reach that in life and you can't nap anymore. Yeah. That would be a sad day.
I need a nap every day. I'm no hero, man. I need my sleep.
No.
Yeah. Gotta get your sleep, kids.
Do you nap on the couch or do you nap in bed?
No, I go right to bed. I basically don't nap as much as I split my sleep. I try to get like 4 hours or 3 hours during the day and another 5 at night. It's pretty sad.
Mm.
It's not healthy, Zig.
Well, Hugh, one day you'll retire and you'll be really old and you'll be going to bed at 7:30 and waking up at 3:30 because that's how...
day might be sooner.
That's how you roll when you're older and you'll be like, crap. It's how I live my middle-aged years.
Especially after having turkey. Yesterday. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's tough to stay awake.
A little tryptophan never hurt anybody. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. More on the Maple Leafs and the NHL free agency period. More on the NFL and the Major League Baseball playoffs. Have yourselves a wonderful Thanksgiving. Enjoy the turkey dinner if you have it today. We'll chat tomorrow morning. Good shows next.